Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
Got a call from the Bucks, and the fifth round had just started, and they said, you know, hey, Justin, you know, if you're still there, and we're going to take you with the, you know, seventh pick in the fifth round. Man, it was just one of those, everything, just all the work and teammates and hard times and good times and everything that I had hoped for kind of finally came to fruition and got lived out in that moment.
And our guest this week is former University of Pennsylvania star and current Super Bowl champion, member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, wide receiver Justin Watson. Justin, thanks so much for the time.
Oh, Matt, it's always great talking to you, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast.
So let's start. Since you guys won the Super Bowl over Kansas City, what's life been like?
Man, it was just such a whirlwind. Once we won, each week it didn't feel like the NFC Championship. You know, it just felt like the next week, and you didn't realize that, you know, you were one of eight teams left, one of four teams left, and then the last two. And then it first starts hitting you when you see the confetti start coming down after the Super Bowl, and it's just a moment that I've watched so many times, you know, every year since I was a kid, and then now I'm standing right in the middle of it. And so that was the first moment that was really cool. And then, you know, we had the, you know, celebration afterwards and the boat parade. And, man, you just start realizing how big of a deal the Super Bowl is. You know, everywhere you go, it was always cool being the NFL player. But, you know, being the Super Bowl champion, it just carries a little bit more weight. So it's been fun. I definitely enjoyed it for a good 2 weeks. And then it was, you know, back to getting ready for next season.
I'm trying to imagine what it must be like being a young NFL player. And specifically this year, to have moments in a huddle where you're looking up at Tom Brady, you're lining up with Mike Evans to your right, Rob Gronkowski, you know, at tight end. You guys pick up Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin. I mean, you're just surrounded by not just good players. Everybody's good in the NFL. But, you know, guys that are, in many cases, legends, if not all pro. What's the experience been like to just be surrounded by these guys?
Man, it's just been such a blessing to have great teammates, experienced teammates, and guys who really want to win. You know, I'd say the one thing contrasting Penn to the NFL, you know, in Penn, when I was there, you know, I was the guy, and a lot of plays came through me, and so my role was large in the game on offense, and I caught the ball, ran the ball, and this year you just have to come into it with a humble spirit and a worker's mentality, because, you know, with all our great players, that wasn't going to be my role. And so I was just happy to learn from guys like Tom, Rob, and hear about what the playoffs was going to be like. just be a sponge around Tom, and anything that he wanted to correct on my route running or something that he felt more comfortable with, you know, just make sure I do that right away. And then just be ready to, you know, work in whatever role I had that week. You know, there was a couple of weeks that I got to start, you know, due to injuries to Chris, and that was awesome. And then there was other weeks where I mostly played on special teams. And so it was just, you know, being happy and appreciative to be in my position and just showing it through my work and my attitude every day.
Let's talk a little bit about you growing up. Was football always your main focus as a kid, or were you a kid that played whatever was happening season wise or whatever the neighborhood was playing?
Yeah, for me, my favorite sport was whatever was next, you know, in the fall, I love football. And then in the winter, I love basketball. And in the spring, I'd be playing baseball. So I really thought for the longest time, baseball was going to be my sport growing up. And then, in my freshman year of football, we made it to the state championship, but I wasn't playing at all. I was on the scout team, the JV team. So I was just getting beat up at practice for 16 weeks, you know, in the cold of Pittsburgh. We played until the middle of December. And so after my freshman year in high school, I almost quit. You know, it was rough. It was long. I was so sore, and I had a lot of fun playing basketball. You know, I said, you know, I'm going to give it one more year. I'm going to work really hard and hopefully try to, you know, get some playing time as a sophomore. And, you know, everything kind of worked out with, you know, I grew a little bit. The off season went well. And then I started playing as a sophomore in high school. And then since then, it was my sport ever since then. You know, football in Pennsylvania is just different. You know, Friday night lights, you know, getting to play in the playoffs and then all the way to the state championship game. And just the love that this state has for football just totally captured me, and I've been loving it ever since.
Now, you grew up in Western PA out in the Pittsburgh area, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So when you love football, when does that love start to track with, boy, I seem to be really good at this and I'm getting a little more attention and maybe I can carry this a little further than the average person? Was there a moment where that started to crystallize for you, you know, at 14, 15, 16?
No, like I said, I feel like in some ways I was a little bit of a late bloomer. You know, really we had a receiver that played at Pitt who was a year older than me. So until I was a senior, I wasn't even the best receiver on our team, you know, let alone one of the best in the country in my mind. And so I kind of just came to work every day. Our coach just always preached attitude and effort, and everything else would take care of itself. And then after my junior year, he said, hey, you had a, you know, pretty good year. I think some colleges are going to be interested. And I wasn't sure what he meant by that. I thought, you know, maybe some D2 or D3 schools. And then that offseason is when I got my first offer from Bucknell, and it was a full ride, and I hadn't even talked to any coaches yet. And so that was my first wow moment. You know, I realized that, man, I'm going to play football in college, and I'm not going to, you know, pay anything to go to college. And from there, you know, we started looking at, you know, is it a big time D1 or a 1AA? And I'll never forget, you know, I love my high school coach, and he's still a big part of my football life today. And he was honest with me and said, hey, you know, I was just at Northwestern. I watched them practice, and I think you could be on the team there, but I don't think you'd ever play and have a big role there. And so I listened to him. You know, we sent my film out to just, you know, the Ivies and the other 1AAs and, you know, the MAC. And that's what I focused on. And so when I got the offer to go to Penn, I kind of thought in my head, well, I'm probably not going to the NFL. So I'm going to get a world-class degree and I'm going to play some really good football at Penn. So I go to Penn and same deal, just kind of work every day, my freshman camp. And after my freshman camp, I earn a starting spot as our third receiver. And so I set program records for receptions and yards as a freshman. And after that, I kind of realized, wow, you know, there's one or two guys that go to the Ivy League every year from the, you know, go to the NFL from the Ivy League. And if I did this as a freshman, then, you know, why not me? Why, if I keep working and I keep getting better, then why can't I go to the NFL? So the first moment I even thought about maybe the NFL was after my freshman year of college.
Did you feel, when you talk about the success you had and the record you set as a freshman, what was the learning curve, though, just speed of the game, stuff like that, and getting adjusted to, you know, being 5-6 hours away from home?
I think Penn does such a great job of preparing you for that. And I really tip my hat to all the coaches in the program there, because I feel like I can hit the ground running, really. You know, I was lucky when I was coming from a high school that ran no huddle spread offense. And my freshman year at Penn, we were transitioning to the first year in a no huddle spread offense. So I got lucky because I wasn't really behind the curve. You know, I was learning the plays just as the seniors, juniors, everybody else on the team was learning them. Speed of the game was something that I caught up pretty quickly. You know, the one thing that every level that you go up, it's just the physicality. You know, and there's always a play, I think, in every freshman in college's life and every rookie in the NFL's life where you take a big hit that was unexpected and you fumble the ball in practice. And I remember my first practice at Penn, you know, I caught a pass and I turned upfield, and then pretty much immediately someone stripped the ball off me. And it's just, you know, it's different than high school. You know, high school, you're the biggest, strongest guy. If you don't see someone coming, you can still brace for impact. And that was my, you know, I think it was my first practice at Penn, and maybe my first catch, someone stripped the ball off me. And that's like, you know, the all-time sin in football is fumbling. And so that was my first moment where I was like, wow, you know, all these guys really want to play. They're all really good, strong, fast. Most of them are older than me. And so there's definitely a lot of growing up that you have to do your freshman year of college.
So freshman to sophomore, as good as you were as a freshman, you take a quantum leap your sophomore year. Do you remember, were there conversations heading into that season with the coaching staff that, listen, we like where you're going, the opportunity is here, we know you work hard, you're going to become the focus of everything we do? Or was it more organic that it just kind of built as spring practice rolls into training camp and, you know, and stuff just expands?
Yeah, so I wasn't sure what my sophomore year was going to look like. Coach Priori took over after my freshman year. So we brought in a new offense coordinator. We had a new receivers coach who had been around, but, you know, he was new to the receivers. And I had my shoulder repaired. I had labrum surgery in that offseason. So I missed all of spring ball with the new offense coordinator. You know, so I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I knew I was falling behind the eight ball with practices, and I was learning as much as I could from the sidelines, and I was lifting legs, you know, like every day of the week because I couldn't use my upper body. So I kind of came into camp unsure of where I was going to stand. And there's a moment that I'll always remember. I was giving a campus tour with our new receivers coach, and we were walking some families and recruits around campus. When he introduced me, he said, "Hey, this is Justin Watson. He's going to be a sophomore receiver next year, and we expect him to be the best player on our team." It was just a wild moment for me because I didn't even believe that of myself at the time. I wasn't coming into the season hoping to be the best player or knowing that was the expectation of me. But when the receiver coach said that about me, whether he was the only one believed it or that the whole coaching staff did, it just gave me, you know, such a confidence in myself, knowing, you know, what I could do and what other people thought I could do that year. And so Coach Ulrich was my receiver coach for 3 years after that. And he's a close friend and someone who taught me so much about football and got me to where I'm at today. And that moment was a defining moment for me, confidence-wise, going into my sophomore year.
To give some context here, the people that maybe aren't familiar, you know, what your career was like at Penn, I think you have the first, third, and fourth highest receiving catches totals for single season, all-time leader in receptions. I think your first, fourth, and sixth receiving, or excuse me, that was receptions, the other one was receiving yardage, but you're littered throughout. You're the all-time leader in catches, yards, receiving touchdowns, all-purpose yards. I could go on and on. What was it like to be putting up those numbers? And I would say probably by halfway through your sophomore year, every Ivy League team on Sunday, the week before they play you, has your number circled on the board. We can't let this guy beat us. And you constantly beat the other teams. How tough an adjustment was it to get used to that type of attention? On the other side, how satisfying was it, everyone in the building knowing you're going to get the ball so many times and to still be able to produce at high levels?
Yeah, so like you said, my sophomore year was my first big breakout year, my first All-American year. And, you know, that was just, I was just enjoying every moment and going with the flow because, like I said, in high school, I wasn't even that guy in high school. You know, we had another kid who did jet sweeps and reverses, another kid, they would move into the slot. So for me, it was all first. You know, I was normally playing on the outside. Then I got double covered, so they put me in the slot. And then I started getting, you know, double covered or bracketed from a nickel and a safety in the slot. So then I started playing in the backfield and getting some handoffs out of the backfield. You know, anyway, they could get me the ball. And so I was just enjoying it. You know, it was things I had never done, but I was having so much fun just playing football kind of like we did as, you know, middle schoolers, where you just try to get, you know, your guys who are fast, the ball any way you can. And then after that year, you know, I started realizing that, hey, this is going to be a lot harder. You know, I'm going to have to, you know, everyone's going to know where I'm at and they're going to have a game plan for me this year and I'm not going to catch anyone by surprise. And I remember I had a statistics teacher came up to me. We were talking about regression to the mean. And if anyone knows what regression to the mean is, he was saying that anytime a player has a breakout year, you know, don't draft them in your fantasy football team because they're going to track back to the average the year after that. You know, everything went right for 1 year and then they'll backtrack. And he called me out by name essentially and was like, you know, and Mr. Watson, I know you had a great year in football and, you know, this rule applies to everybody. So I remember that was a motivating factor. And I said, you know what, I don't want this past year to be my average, or I want to get even better. And so there was just such a chip on my shoulder the whole off season. I still felt like, you know, not, you know, there's teams in the Ivy League who didn't know me coming out of high school. And I had such a huge chip that I didn't have any, you know, 1A offers. And I wanted to show everyone and prove everyone wrong. And especially once, like I said, the NFL came in sight after that year, you know, there was nothing getting in my way. And it was fun having teammates around and people to push me and support me the whole way through, because we really worked hard that offseason after we won, shared the Ivy League title my sophomore year, and we really wanted to go back to back the year after that.
To the point of that conversation, I mean, it wasn't just that you put up numbers, but critical third downs, you know, tie game, goal to go. I'm sitting in the play-by-play booth. I know where the ball's going. It's just a matter of how it's going to go. And yet you would constantly come through. How palpable was the frustration from guys that were defending you that they probably knew what was coming and they still couldn't stop it? I mean, there had to be times where that just had to be an incredible rush to know that these guys are working so hard to prevent me from doing it, and they can't.
It was fun because I'm not much of a trash talker. You know, I just kind of let my game do the speaking, but a lot of guys want to trash talk me. And so I remember in college, you know, there'd be times where, you know, say they come out in a new defense and they would, you know, bat down the first pass in my direction, whether they were playing cover two to my side or just double covering or whatever. And our offense coordinator, John Reagan, was so good that he'd find a way to get me the ball in some type of capacity. He'd give me some type of one-on-one matchup or something where at least it's me versus safety over top something. And one game I always remember, it was my junior year at Yale, and they came out with a good game plan. It was a little bit wet, and they tackled me for like a 2 yard gain on my first carry, and like the whole defense is around me all chirping, and you can tell that they've been getting talked to all week. And you know, then after that, me and Alec Torgerson just kind of lit it up, and we went for, you know, like I think 3 touchdowns and 180 yards in the first half. And it's just cool seeing them go from all together tackling me, chirping on me, to after the third touchdown right at the end of the first half, you know, they're all bickering and yelling at each other. And that's one of my favorite parts about football, is it's such a physical game and it's such a hard game, and you need such a passion and a will to play it. And everyone starts the game with that passion and will, but at a certain point, you can break it on your opponent. And so that's what was fun for me each week. You know, I felt like opponents would get, you know, psyched up all week, and they'd come up with a game plan and they'd believe in it. And then just to see the belief and the game plan fall and them start realizing that they weren't going to stop us that week was fun for me.
When you're sitting in meetings during the week and game plans are being developed and you see ideas of how to get you the ball when you're a Penn, were there ever moments where you were like, wow, I never would have thought of that, but yeah, let's do it?
Yeah. A lot of the reactions is they put a new play in. And like I said, I think at times in my young career, I was humble to a fault. And so they'd show me that, hey, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to get open. My initial reaction in my inner conversation was like, wow, I don't know if I'll be able to do that. You know, I've never done that before. You know, I've never, like I said, I never played running back and got a handoff out of the backfield, or I never ran that route out of the slot. And now it's going to be a huge part of our game plan. But I was always willing, you know, I would say, well, you know, it's only Tuesday. We got 3 days of practice. You know, I'm just going to go out there and try my best at it. And I think, that took me a long way. And it was, even if I messed it up the first time, I was going to keep trying and going back and doing it and working and staying after practice with the quarterback, staying after practice with our receiver coach until I got it just right. And then, you know, each week it was something new, you know, a route or some type of scheme or, you know, some motion out of the backfield or something. But, you know, just putting the work in and really repping it out all week in practice. When we got to Saturday, I was just so confident and ready, and I trusted in, you know, our quarterbacks and other receivers and our coaches so much that all that really mattered was winning. So I was going to do anything it took to win for us.
Talked about all the numbers and the records you set. You were part of a couple Ivy League title teams. When you think of your time at Penn, you know, what are some of the top memories that come back?
Yeah, and I think a lot of them start for me in my sophomore year because, you know, we took a team that was 2-8 the year before, and then we turned around and went 7-3 and ran the table down the stretch to get a share of the Ivy title. The first big memory was when we beat Villanova after the, you know, 104-year drought. You know, we didn't play them 104 times. Villanova was just one of those teams that we couldn't get over the hump for a long time, even before I was Penn. And I remember being a Pennsylvania guy and just, you know, Villanova always getting the better of Penn. And my freshman year, I remember kind of like what I was talking about. You know, we got down on Villanova early in the first half, but the game was far from over. But a lot of the guys, you kind of felt like, oh, here it comes again. You know, we're going to get blown out again by Villanova. And that was just an attitude that I was sick of around Penn. I didn't think that we should come into any game thinking that we were going to lose to anybody. And so that was a game I really wanted really badly is for us to beat Villanova. And that was one of my first kind of breakout games. And it was put us on the map a little bit and gave us a lot of confidence that if we can beat number four Villanova, you know, at night on the road, then we can beat anybody this year. And then so we beat Nova, and then, you know, down the stretch, we end up beating Princeton and then Harvard in back-to-back weeks to secure a share of that title. And those games were just so fun. You know, that Harvard game, they had a 22-game win streak, and so another team that was undefeated the year before that, and we're coming into their place on the road, and you know, I had maybe the best game of my career against them. It was just so fun seeing that team go from 2-8 the year before, you know, not knowing if we were going to beat teams going in. And then down the stretch, it felt like we could have beat anybody. And that was a year I wish we could have played in the playoffs because I think we were just getting hot at the right time. There's so many fun memories. That's what I love about Penn. It's a brotherhood and everybody really cares about each other. Everybody wants to win. And that's one of the beauties of going to a school that, you know, not everyone is going to the NFL, and this is their last stop for football, and they want to make the most of it, and they want to win as many games as they can. And that's what I bought into at Penn. You know, I wanted to go to the NFL, but first and foremost is I wanted to win for everybody else, and that's what everyone believed, is we just wanted to get wins and celebrate together and championships. And so it was a cool, really cool atmosphere and a lot of cool memories I have from Penn.
So you mentioned the NFL. To anyone that was watching, it was obvious that you were going to have a shot because of your physical talents, your work ethic, the numbers you were putting up. So as a senior, obviously your main focus is trying to win an Ivy League title, but does the attention from the NFL start to become something you have to deal with as far as scouts, maybe coaches, or, you know, your Penn coaches saying, hey, so-and-so wants to talk to you, stuff like that. Do you remember when it's the process kind of started to trickle into your life?
Yeah, I'll never forget. We were in camp going into my senior year, you know, before, you know, camp, summer camp before the fall actually started. And I was catching punts with another guy, and he asked me, like, hey, are you the type of person that if you know someone's watching you, you get all wigged out, or, and you'd rather not know. And I was like, no, what are you even talking? Like, I didn't know what he was talking about. And I said, you know, not really. And he was pointing over. He said, well, there's a Chiefs scout over there, and I'm pretty sure he's not here for any, you know, anyone else. And so I was like, wow, you know, I thought it was so cool. And, you know, I always, you know, work hard at practice, but I was like so geared up and I wanted to work even harder and run even faster. And I had like a terrible practice. I remember thinking I blew it. You know, I had a, you know, a drop or two, I slipped, you know, I just, anything that could go wrong, it went wrong. And I remember kind of hanging my head after practice. And another one of our assistant coaches, Coach Downs, came up to me and was like, hey man, you know, you don't need to do anything more than what you've been doing the last, you know, couple of years. Just keep doing what you've been doing. You know, it's just one team. And when one practice, you know, there's gonna be plenty more of those. And so after that, I stopped pressing on the NFL. I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to play my game, do what I do every day. And that was a helpful moment and a helpful thought going forward. The fun part about it was that everybody else wanted it for me, you know, maybe even more than I wanted it for myself. That, you know, when a scout would come to a game or practice, you know, to me, it was just, let's just focus on winning. If we win, everything else will take care of itself. And if I play well, then we'll win. And if we win and I play well, then the NFL will take care of itself. But yeah, our coaches really wanted it to happen for me. And I know in practice, like, you know, a scout would come for maybe 30 minutes. And the 30 minutes that he would there, our coach would pull out like all the big plays and run all these, you know, plays that I liked running and make me look good. And so he'd, you know, we'd crush 7-on-7 together, and then the scout would leave and he'd pull me off to the side, like, well, you know, and like, hey, well, I did everything I could for you there, man. And I'd appreciate it. And down the stretch, you know, they were, instead of giving me handoffs, they give me touch passes, you know, going across the middle. So it counted as a reception. And they did some of that stuff for, you know, record books and things that now looking back are really cool to have. But in the moment, you know, I just wanted to win. And then after the season, I was going to worry about the NFL and what my stats looked like. No, it was something that was in the back of my mind, but just winning was the ultimate for me, especially when I got voted a team captain. You know, it was team first the whole way.
To the point of once the season's over and the focus becomes the NFL, how much of a grind is that process? I'm just constant workouts, and you start getting into, I know there's like paperwork, questionnaires, stuff like that, pro days. Did you enjoy it in the moment, or was it more something you looked at as a means to get me where I want to go?
Yeah. So first of all, it definitely is a grind. You know, I would take a week off after the season, you know, when we'd finish in Thanksgiving. And so I took, after my junior year, I took a week off. And then after that, you know, you work 51 weeks straight until you finish. And then as a senior, and then I had to immediately go into combine prep and training for that. So you go, you know, 51 straight weeks right into, you know, training for All-Star games, and then right into training for the combine, and then right into training for, you know, your rookie camp and OTAs. And so it's just a lot of weeks where you don't really get any time off of working out or football. But for me, I loved it. You know, it was, after I finished and I had like 3 days to finally decide on an agent where I could really talk and not have to worry about my amateur status, you know, being revoked. And, so I signed an agent, we figure out where I'm going to do my combine training. I'm going to do it in Florida. And then, you know, I'm scrambling to find, you know, 5 classes that I can take remotely online, you know, down in Florida, so I can work out down there and still get my degree. So it was hard looking back. You know, we worked out twice a day, and then I had class that I had to catch up on at night, and, you know, fly back for some tests here and there. But it was my first taste of being a professional athlete. You know, first taste of waking up, and the most important thing on the docket was working out for the day and getting a little bit of money as a stipend just to carry me over. But it was just so fun thinking that, you know, something that I love putting extra time into is going to consume, you know, all my time at some point. And so that was, it was a fun process. And then, you know, I get to play in the East-West game, and that was a huge honor and a fun week. And it's hard because every moment you're being evaluated, you know, in the hotel, you're getting interviewed all the time. Then at practice, you know, there's every scout from every team is there. And then you go to get something to eat, and there's scouts, you know, in the dining hall looking at, you know, how does he treat the staff and how does he talk to other players? So you just got to be on all week. And I remember getting to Friday, which is the game is on Saturday. So I kind of exhale on Friday, like, man, interviews are over. Most of the scouts leave. I just got to play the game and then I'm out of here. And I got a call from my agent. Hey, you know, a receiver just dropped out of the Senior Bowl and they want you to play another week. And a lot of teams want to see you there. And then, so I was like, man, I thought this was a 1 week thing. And I go to Mobile, Alabama and do it all over again in the Senior Bowl. But man, all those experiences, it helped me get drafted, and it was just so fun. And my first moment into, like I said, the Super Bowl, all these games that I grew up watching with my dad from when I was a young kid, and now I get to play in the Senior Bowl. And so, there were some, you know, hard moments, hard weeks, but, you know, as a kid who loves football, and when the NFL is your dream and you get to live it out and try to fight for it, it was a ton of fun.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with former University of Penn star and current Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver Justin Watson right after this.
Hey, everybody, it's Cherry Gregg here. You may know me around town as KYW News Radio's community affairs reporter, but every week I produce and host Flashpoint, a podcast where we highlight the hot topics in Philadelphia, local newsmakers and change makers burning things up in our region. From gerrymandering to gender equality and policing in schools, we'll walk you through the flames on Flashpoint. It's available wherever you downloaded this podcast that you're listening to now. So subscribe. Thanks so much.
And we are back. Our guest this week, Tampa Bay Bucs wide receiver Justin Watson.
During the draft process, you end up being drafted by Tampa in the fifth round. During the process, do the Buccaneers make themselves very known to you? Or were they in stealth mode watching you? And if I had asked you the day before the draft, maybe they're not even in the top five or six teams you think are going to take you. Was their interest in you palpable to you?
Yeah, so there was nine teams that brought me in for a pre-draft visit. Each team gets 30 pre-draft visits. And so nine different teams brought me in. And the teams that you want to – my agent said, you know, one of those teams is going to draft you, or the Patriots are going to draft you, because the Patriots were in stealth mode. And they liked me a lot, but they didn't want to bring me in for the visit so that everyone else would know they brought me in for the visit. And so some of those teams I went and they told me, hey, you know, we just brought you in for the physical and, you know, we'll draft you if you're there in the seventh round, or if you're a free agent, then we'll like to pick you up, but, you know, we're not going to draft you. And so there was probably, you know, four or five teams that I thought were going to draft me. I remember I really thought Green Bay or Baltimore was going to draft me. And then, you know, Tampa or the Patriots probably would have been next. And, you know, I worked out the morning of the third day of the draft when I thought I was going to get picked. And I remember I get a call from my agent. He's kind of frantic and he's like, hey man, I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, he's been telling me I'm definitely getting drafted at this point, you know, all week. He's like, you're getting drafted probably fourth or fifth round. And then he calls me all frantic and he's like, hey man, I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, no one's picking up the phone. You know, it's just a dead silence day. You know how it goes. Ivy League guys, they always end up falling. Like, you know, you're going to be on some team and that's all that matters. But, you know, maybe it's seventh round, maybe it's free agent. He's like, I don't know for sure. And so now I'm like, well, dang, you know, I got my family here. You know, I thought we were at Penn and I thought, you know, I'm for sure getting drafted. And then he calls me like, you know, it's the draft. I don't know what happens. Everyone holds their cards so tight. And we get to the end of the fourth round and Green Bay and the Ravens both had picks. And so I thought one of them was going to be me. And they both draft receivers at the end of the fourth round. And I thought, like, man, this is going to be a long day. Those are both teams that I knew liked me a lot. They took receivers. And maybe I am going to fall. And kind of right then is when I got a call from the Bucs. And the fifth round had just started. And they said, you know, hey, Justin, you know, if you're still there and, you know, a couple picks here, we're gonna take you with the, you know, seventh pick in the fifth round. Man, it was just one of those – everything, just all the work and teammates and – hard times and good times and everything that I had hoped for kind of finally came to fruition and got lived out in that moment. And so it was just, it was such a fun moment to share with my family. You know, I still watch that video and just think about what a lucky and blessed time that was when I got to be with all my teammates who had been there for my pro day and been there for, you know, all 4 years previous to that. So yeah, it's a scary process, but man, it was such a fun, one of, you know, once in a lifetime and one of the funnest days of my life.
Before we talk about NFL, you just mentioned be with your teammates and your family. How important, I know the answer to this, but how important is family? How much does your family drive you and you want to share everything with them?
Family's everything to me. You know, I know, you know, but my oldest brother, Tommy, was born with cerebral palsy and he's, you know, in a wheelchair and paralyzed from the neck down. And, you know, he's just been such a huge part of my life and a huge influence on my life. And he's the reason why, you know, I work the way that I work. You know, I remember I was in high school and I just got done with two-a-days and my, you know, feet had blisters on them and my legs were sore and I almost threw up earlier that day. And I was just so tired and I was complaining to anyone who would listen. And my brother at the time was in an assisted living home and I'm going down the hallway to go visit him with my dad. And I'm complaining to him about, you know, how sore my legs are, these blisters. And then I get down the hall and I turn into my brother's room and, you know, there he is, you know, in a wheelchair in a room full of other men and women in wheelchairs. And he's smiling ear to ear. And in that moment, it just hit me, you know, I'm so lucky to even be on my 2 feet, let alone get to play a game, you know, like football. And I just thought of him in that moment. And if he was lived in my shoes for one day, you know, he'd run until his feet were bleeding and he threw up and he passed out. And as soon as he could get up and run again, he'd be back out running until he couldn't, you know? And so from that moment in high school on, he gets me through a lot of hard times and moments that I feel are unfair or moments that I want to quit or I don't want to go anymore. You know, I just think of my brother, Tommy, and how I'm just blessed with so much of these gifts and opportunities that he hasn't had. And so I feel like I have to make the most of them for both of us. And so that was fun about, you know, football on the weekends and in college that was something my whole family came to. And, you know, whether my brother had a good week or a not so good week, or if he was, you know, in or out of the hospital, you know, I knew for a couple hours on Saturday that, you know, my family could just worry about football and have fun, you know, watching Penn win a football game. And that's why, you know, winning meant so much to me, because I knew, you know, when we won, it was just such a lift to my brother and my whole family. And I realized through the years that I wasn't the only one going through, you know, hard things at home, and that everyone brought, you know, a single mom or a family member that was sick or something that was hard on their family to college. And when we won on Saturdays, you know, everyone just celebrated and had fun with each other for a day. And you start realizing how powerful that is, you know, to be able to just lift that off somebody for one day, get somebody, you know, that's going through a hard time to just have one day where they get to enjoy their son or their cousin or their nephew, you know, playing football and winning a football game. And that's why football's always meant so much to me.
And do I remember correctly, Tommy was able to come watch you in the NFL, was it in Pittsburgh when you guys played the Steelers? I don't know. I think it might've been preseason.
Yeah. My sophomore year, the first preseason game, Tommy was able to come and he was actually able to come down onto the field for pregame. And he wasn't able to go to any games at Penn because it was a little bit too far of a drive. And so it was his first game that he had been to since high school for me. And it was an awesome moment. It's a picture that I'll have on every wall, you know, every office for the rest of my life, you know, my whole family in 17 jerseys at Heinz Field, on the field pregame. And we had my whole extended family there, watching and supporting. And so, the guy that I do everything for, you know, who doesn't get to go to a lot of games, the fact that he got to see me at Heinz Field in an NFL uniform was just awesome for me.
So the move towards the NFL, obviously it's a ton of work. Do you remember the moment, you talk about the excitement and the happiness of draft. When does that subside and kind of the cold reality of pro football set in that you are not the superstar, you are not the record holder from Penn, you are now number 17, fifth round draft pick,
yep.
Whatever you are on the depth chart coming into OTAs and stuff like that, what was that like?
Yes, that was one of the first conversations they had with me. They said, you know, Justin, you know, we loved you as a player. We loved your attitude and what you're going to bring into our building. But they were pretty plain with me, and they said, hey, we got Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, Adam Humphries, who's about to get a big contract, Chris Godwin's our fourth receiver, who's a budding Pro Bowler. And then, you know, you're fighting for that fifth receiver spot. And that's what we brought you in for. And they said, you know, a fifth receiver in the NFL, you got to know every position. You got to block well. And you're going to have to be really good on special teams if you're going to play for us. And so I thought up to that point, I would do anything it took to get to the NFL. And now I'll do anything it takes to stay in the NFL. So if it's blocking and tackling on special teams, then, you know, that's no problem. And I came down right away and had a couple really good practices and was doing well on special teams. And about a week into my time in Tampa, I hurt my hamstring, and I was out for pretty much all of OTAs, you know, that first off-season program. And that's when it first set in that, you know, hey, just because you got drafted in the fifth round doesn't really mean anything once you get out here. You know, once you get onto the field, you know, all the draft picks and the contracts and all that stuff goes out the window, and it's just who's the best out here. And I started realizing that everyone was really good. We had a lot of really good receivers all fighting for that one fifth receiver spot. And so I, again, kind of just felt like I was back to high school or early days at Penn, and now I'm behind the eight ball and I'm fighting, I'm clawing, and I get back healthy for summer camp. And it was hard. You know, I wasn't in the shape I wanted to be in because I'm coming off this hamstring and I'm learning everything, all the kinks that I should have worked out in OTAs. I'm now working out in training camp. And it was just such a grind and a battle because they wanted to see what I had. So I was just getting so many reps. And I couldn't say no to any of them, but it was just like my body could almost not take anymore. So my rookie year was hard. You know, it was hard being, you know, the fifth guy behind all those great receivers. But it made me the player I am today. You know, I got to spend a whole year learning behind four awesome receivers. And I got to spend a whole year just focusing on special teams and knowing that that was keeping me active and playing each week. And now, you know, I've become a really good special teams player and developed as a lot as a receiver. And I know that being a receiver that plays special teams is going to, you know, keep me around in the NFL. For a while. And so it's, you know, it all happens for a reason. I'm thankful the way it did work out.
Your first catch came your rookie year, your first touchdown the next year, December 8th, 17 yard catch from Jameis Winston. I'm sure you remember the play, but do you remember breaking the huddle, and was your thought process like, where were you? Were you the guy? Were you the first read on this, or was it jailbreak, you got open? Kind of take me through it.
Yeah, so I really think it was probably a busted defense. You know, I started on the outside and I motioned down to the slot, and I had kind of just like our, we call it like a middle read. It was just a kind of like a skinny post over the middle, and just the way that a lot of defenses play, I mean, they take away the middle, so a lot of defenses, you know, you don't get the ball in that play. And I remember, just when you watch enough football and play enough football, you start realizing when a team messes up, like when there should be someone there and they're not. And I remember their safety came walking down and he blitzed off the edge, and I kind of chipped him and ran into him. But I knew that once I saw it was, you know, two split high safeties and one of them blitzed, that someone messed up. And so I turned and I'm like yelling at Jameis to try to get him to throw me like the hot route, and he gets flushed out of the pocket. So I turned the other way, and then when I turned the other way, I realized that he had thrown it in the direction that I was going. So I kind of had to spin around and then make got a little bit of a sliding, diving catch. And it was just like, you know, like I said, I went from catching 14 touchdowns as a senior at Penn. And then the next year, as a rookie, I caught a couple in the preseason, but then I went, you know, really a whole year without catching a touchdown in a game that counted. And so it was just, you know, it felt like, you know, back in college, and I, you know, through injury was, you know, played, you know, Mike Evans hurt his hamstring that game. And so I kind of stepped into a starting receiver role from that point on. And yeah, my whole family was there. It was, you know, I caught the touchdown, and it was just like, wow, you know, I went into the game, you know, just with my normal role. I was going to, you know, be ready for anyone that went down to play in their place and play on special teams. And I was actually our punt returner that game as well. And then, yeah, and then I caught that touchdown and brought us within, you know, a score of tying the game, and had a couple of catches down the stretch. So, yeah, it was fun. You know, it just brought me back to college. And then, you know, since then, it gave me a lot of confidence, you know, in the five or so games that I've started. Since then, you know, knowing that, you know, hey, I belong, I've scored touchdowns in this league, and knowing that's a hard accomplishment to get.
You also, you hold a very interesting place in Buccaneer history. You're the first, you're the only offensive player that actually has recorded a sack. As you got a sack, I guess, Carolina tried to run a fake punt and it didn't fool you. Tell me about that play. And you mentioned how special teams become kind of a center point of your football life. So what do you remember about that? And did you kind of realize in the moment what you had did, or was it just, hey, we got to stop? And then was it like, hey, you know, you get credit for a sack for that, right?
Oh yeah. So we knew Carolina and Matt Rule, who was at Temple for so long. Yeah, they love running fakes and fake punts. And so I saw the formation they lined up in, and I watched a ton of film on any play that I'm going to be in the game. And so in the first half, I realized they were running a fake, and I'm screaming and yelling it out to everyone. And I can tell that they checked out of it. And then the next time they kind of line up in the same formation, but they flip it. And so I'm screaming and yelling to everyone. And so I thought it was a fake the whole way. And then when he, well, you know, lined up the pass, and I didn't think I was going to get there, but then he tried to step up in the pocket, you know, punter trying to act like a quarterback. You know, I just came and just hit him as hard as I could. And after I tackled him, I got to the sideline. I was kind of like jokingly the one telling everyone, like, hey, he lined up for a pass. You know, that's not a tackle for loss. That's a sack. You know, he was throwing. I remember all the defensive linemen and the edge rushers were like, no way that counts as a sack. And, you know, I, as an offensive guy, you don't realize how hard it is to get a sack. And, you know, there's edge rushers that we've drafted, and it's been a year and a half, you know, since they recorded a sack. And so I remember when I got that sack, there a couple of my close friends are, you know, edge rusher, defensive linemen, and they hadn't had a sack in their whole career. And so it'd always be like them catching a touchdown before me, you know. And so they were ragging on me for a while, you know, saying that, you know, that I didn't realize, you know, how hard it is to get a sack, and it kind of just fell to me. But then I guess it put us back in the lead for most sacks in the NFL at that point. So then everyone was happy that an offensive guy chipped in on the sack total for the year.
And I know this is a podcast and it's audio only, but the way your face lights up talking about that sack, and it's so funny because defensive players love catching, you know, when they go in on the goal line, stuff like that. And offensive players love making plays like defensively like that. It's you can almost feel it's like a badge of honor for you guys.
No, seriously. That's exactly, I like what you said. I felt like one of those big 300-pound D linemen that catches the, you know, the pass out in the flat for a touchdown on the 1 yard line. That's what I felt like in the opposite direction.
So for you guys, we mentioned you win the Super Bowl. There was a lot of attention on you guys coming into the season, obviously signing Tom Brady, and that's going to bring a percentage of attention. But you talk about all the talent you guys had, and frankly, the first few months it was up and down as everybody was mm-hmm. was feeling themselves and kind of learning to play together. Was there a moment where you kind of felt like in the locker room or just watching or playing that you guys started to hit your stride? You know, where did you felt like, okay, I think we're figuring this out. We're going to be tough out from here on out.
So kind of the season as a whole, you know, Tom was so great because been through it all. And he's seen teams that started hot and finished hot, and teams that needed to find themselves and then, you know, ultimately got to where they wanted to be towards the end. And so the whole first month or two of the season, Tom just kept telling us, like, hey, you know, we're not the team we're going to be. Things are going to change. We're going to find out who we are, what we do good. Kind of don't worry about where we are as a team right now. All that matters is that we win enough games early in the season so that when we find out who we are and we start playing well, that, you know, we'd haven't shot ourselves in the foot so many times early in the season that we'll still get into the playoffs. And so we start off and we lose, we get crushed in New Orleans, and that was hard, but, you know, Tom just kind of kept us on track and said, hey, that's a really good team we started out with. It's our first game together. You know, we got Carolina. We just got to win. You know, each week we just have to worry about winning because we're going to keep getting better as a team. And so we were winning a lot of games. And I think we were on like a 3-game win streak after we beat the Raiders. And then we signed AB, you know, week 8. He played in week 9 the first time against the Saints. And we got, you know, dismantled against the Saints, like 35-3 at home. That was a hard loss to take. And then we end up going a stretch where we lose 3 out of 4. And, you know, we were going to the bye week, you know, losing 3 out of 4. And you know, it was a gut, you know, gut check and a, you know, gut check for us as a team. You know, what's going to happen? I mean, a lot of people outside the building were saying, you know, it's going to take 2 years for, you know, the Tom effect and for these guys to all get gelled together and, you know, they can be able to keep the team together. And we just had to focus on, you know, hey, we know we're getting better. You know, in the second half against the Chiefs, we almost came back and won after they got up on us. And we kind of ran into a little bit easier part of the schedule. And as we were improving and after the bye week, we won our last 4 games going into the playoffs. And then, you know, we beat Washington. And the last, I think, huge test for us was beating New Orleans in the divisional round, because since Bruce Arians has been here, you know, we were 0-4 against the Saints. We hadn't won against them, and they just seemed like they had, you know, really great game plans for us, and we just couldn't get anything going against them offensively in the 4 times that we played them. And so that was going to be the game, for all of us, that this is a team that's had our number. We haven't been able to beat them or really put up a good game against them in 2 years, and that's who stands between us and the Super Bowl. And we went into New Orleans and the Superdome and took them down. I think that was the moment when we all realized, all right, the Saints were the last team that we weren't sure if we could beat, and we beat them handily. And now, you know, there's no one but us stopping us. You know, it was just cool seeing the confidence grow when we went and played Green Bay, and we beat them big earlier in the year, which gave us a lot of confidence going to beat them again. And then when we had 2 weeks to game plan against the Chiefs, I just know both sides of the ball. The defense just felt so good, and everything that Todd Bowles was giving them, and offensively, you know, that first 15 plays is what you always talk about, and starting hot and starting fast, and, you know, a mixture of Tom and B.A. and Byron Leftwich, man, they just drew up a lot of really great plays that we knew were going to be big hitters early on, and good plays in the red zone that we knew we weren't going to have to settle for field goals because we had a really good red zone plan against them.
What was it? I mean, I talked to you the week leading up to the Super Bowl. You weren't active for the game. You were on the roster, but one of the handful of guys that every week. Was that something you expected? Was it, I mean, it's obviously disappointing, but, you know, I know you're a team guy, you take it in stride, but what was it like, you know, learning that?
It was hard. You know, it was a game that I always wanted to play in, and I wasn't playing in it. But for me, you know, I just, you know, each week I say I want to have an impact on us winning the game. And so, like I said, sometimes that's me catching passes. Sometimes that's me playing special teams. And other times, you know, it's going to be me helping the guys that aren't normally playing my spots at receiver or special teams. And so, yeah, like I said, I thought, yeah, I played, you know, the week before that in the NFC Championship and had our lone special teams tackle. And I just thought special teams alone that would give me a shot there. But then when I knew I wasn't playing and we had a new guy playing a really important position for us on special teams, I kind of just took that as my role to, hey, I'm still going to really prepare like I always do. I'm going to help the guys who are in my position because winning a Super Bowl is good for all of us. Yeah, so like I said, it's just, you know, from the first time I played football, our coach was talking about attitude and effort, and those are the only two things you can control in this game. And so, you know, I couldn't control who the coaches were going to play that week. I couldn't control a lot of things. But I knew each day I can control coming in with a good attitude and putting an effort to help us win, whether it was on the look team or helping somebody else prepare for a game, you know.
Do you ever have just like kind of holy crap moments when you catch a pass from Tom Brady or you pass Rob Gronkowski in the locker room? Like just these moments, like I'm sure you do, but just I'd like you to articulate it. Just what you're getting the chance to do and what you're a part of.
I think the one moment that really describes it, you know, Mike Evans is, you know, a really famous guy. He's an awesome guy. And whenever I first got to Tampa and he's been welcoming me since I've been here, you know, we'll go out to eat with Mike or, you know, I work out with him all the time. And, you know, when we're out working out, it's just us out there. And, you know, maybe one kid will come up, take a picture, or we go out to eat. You know, no one really bothers Mike too much. We walk in the front door and we get a table in the back and then we eat. And I remember the first two times I met Tom, we all went out to dinner as like receivers, tight ends, quarterbacks. And, you know, like we didn't just get like a table in the back. There was like this room that was sectioned off in the back of the steakhouse that like I didn't even know existed. And we're all there and there's like a door cracked a little bit that leads to the outside. And like, we're all seated down. We see Tom, you know, pull around, kind of get shuttled out of the, you know, the back of this restaurant and kind of through the kitchen and out into the, where we're sitting. And, so that was the first moment I was like, and he brings, you know, Giselle to dinner. And so at first I'm like, wow, you know, this guy, he can't even walk in the front door of a restaurant. And, you know, he brings his supermodel wife to dinner with them. And he was such a cool guy from the first moment. It was just, wanted to be one of the guys, wanted to be a teammate to everybody else and wanted to get to know everyone. And then the next day we were all going to a field to work out and we get to this field and it's on like a high school campus. And, you know, they have security guards and like three checkpoints just to get into the field because Tom's going to be there. And then, I remember we're working out and then a helicopter flies over and just stays hovering over the field. And I asked like something like, yo, what is that? What's the helicopter doing here? And they said, you know, anytime Tom comes out here and works out, this helicopter follows him to this field, films the workout and then follows him all the way home. And so that was the first moment I was like, wow, you know, I've been working out with NFL guys for 2 years all the time at this point, and I've never seen a helicopter follow anybody and film the entire workout just because of who they are as a player, you know? And that was the first moment when I was like, you know, okay, this, you know, this guy is, he's an NFL player like the rest of us, but you know, there's something more to him. But yeah, you know, since, you know, because of quarantine and COVID, you know, we were kind of locked in our bubble. But man, just the success he's had, you know, to think that one player has more Super Bowl rings than any franchise in NFL history is just, I mean, it's, you know, it's just an accomplishment that I don't think anyone ever thought would happen in any professional sport, that one player could have more personal accolades than any franchise has, you know.
Justin Watson, thanks so much for taking the time. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you, Matt. I really enjoyed it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank former University of Pennsylvania football star, current Tampa Bay Buccaneer, Justin Watson, for being our guest this week. If you like this show and you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. Now, you can follow the show on Twitter, at 1on1Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and check us out next time when we bring you another conversation with somebody you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.